Welcome into the Nebraska 24/7 podcast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Brian Christofferson, Michael Brunts. We are not in any Husker 24/7 studios. We're actually at Memorial Stadium today.
It's a very finicky ice machine in the background.
Yeah, you might hear it every now and then. It might annoy you. It annoys me.
It's given a lot of ice to you over the years, though.
It has. It's been pretty good.
Show a little love.
A lot of times it gets jammed at halftime when people are getting their cookies and their popcorn, and you can tell the rookies from the veterans. The veterans just move around the one that's jammed. The rookies just hold their cup underneath waiting for that ice to fall, and it never does.
You know what the worst things are? At least this one's the old school pop machine. I can't stand those ones.
Oh, Coca-Cola Freestyle?
Well, the ones where it's one. There's one thing,
yeah,
and you gotta, you know, you press your little buttons to get it to whatever you want, but it always backs up the line, yeah. Like 10 deep.
Yep, that's the Coca-Cola Freestyle.
Stupidest thing
I've ever
seen.
They come out warm.
It's not good pop.
It's not as good pop.
Yeah.
I am 1,000% in agreement on this.
I agree. It's bad soda.
Yeah, it's pop.
Soda boy.
We're not on a Coke.
Soda boy over here.
Just saying.
I'll accept Coke before I accept soda.
We're not in the South either.
Yeah, well, closer to the South than we are a coast.
It's true.
All right. Well,
that's factually accurate.
Well, you'll be closer to a coast on Saturday, sort of.
Will
kind
we?
Of. You'd be closer to a lake, I guess.
Yeah.
I think we're still in hearty pop territory, aren't we, in Ohio?
Probably.
I'll try it out, see how the people respond.
Though Ohio's in that weird area where some people refer it as out east, other people refer to it as the Midwest. It doesn't really get a B any sort of thing geographically. The geography nerds are excited about this discussion right now. We can carry that on Twitter.
I'm sure Wendy's.
We're really hooking people here.
Wendy's started in Columbus, Ohio, I believe, too.
Yeah, Dublin.
Yeah.
Is that why they went after Scott Frost? Little preemptive battle.
Where was Runza? Where was Runza and all that?
Yeah. And they should have had Frost back.
Come get your boy.
Instead, they were just making another commercial about a local high school football game and, you know, the team coming in after a big win getting their Runzas. Were you ever part of a Runza commercial, Brian?
No, I was not.
They should have had you in there. They should have you on now.
My biggest problem at Runza was I didn't wash my shirt enough. This was when I was in high school.
Man, I'm glad that it's. I was worried you were going to say I didn't wash my hands, and I'm like, well, I'm never going to Runza again.
I always wash my shirt, but I had the. I would have the same fry smelling shirt on for like 3 to 4 weeks before I would change it, because my theory was it's going to stink anyway when I'm there.
Did you like leave it in a car or in a bag in the garage, or did you actually wear that inside?
I think I put it like in my closet. In my bedroom.
This is just around fry smelling everything up?
Yeah, just fring smelling everything up.
I mean, I wouldn't say I had it all together at 17 or 18. I don't have it together 20 years later.
Did your friends ever call you frings?
Frings weren't, I don't think the frings had taken off yet.
No.
No one had thought, like, what if we combined them?
Do you have, like, a support group with, like, the Subway people and how they always sort of smell like that kind of weird Subway musk? You guys know what I'm talking about?
Weird Subway musk?
Yeah.
Like yeast?
You don't ever notice when you walk out of Subway that you kind of have that, like, smell? Like, Subway has a very distinct smell to me. I don't know, maybe Brunts never goes to Subway. Probably doesn't.
Yeah. I do. I guess I never walked out smelling like it. I never, like, stayed there long enough.
You ever eat Indian food at your house and then...
I haven't, actually.
Well, like, get it to go and, you know, get some oven or something, eat it at your house, and that's a rough next day.
Yeah.
When you wake up to it, you better get like 5 candles out.
I just eat it in the garage.
This is great. Nebraska's playing Ohio State. We're talking about scent after food. So let's break down the Bethune-Cookman game
that was.
Was it 45-9, I think, was the final score?
Yep.
What takeaways do you have from that game, if any? You have to have at least one. I think that's in our contract with the podcast.
We saw a lot of guys play. That's my takeaway.
All right.
And well, I think the depth is probably not as good as maybe what you thought it was. So, especially at offensive line, is that fair? I think there's a pretty clear separation in some position groups between
second
the
and third and team played Bethune-Cookman to a 7-6 game in the last 30 minutes, not saying they were all completely dialed in, but that's their chance to play snaps, and it wasn't a work of art. But
yeah, Noah Vedral's first performance in Memorial Stadium probably isn't one he's going to remember beyond the touchdown. And the, you know, he's probably not going to want to look at the stat line when he has kids or, you know, show them this is what happened in my first start. 2-13, I think, is what he finished.
Yeah, but in 20 years from now, you could, if you can bury the stats, you could make that like 8-13 at least in your mind. Like, yeah, I didn't have a great day. There's like 8-13 or something.
Just assume that nobody can find the internet or Husker Max at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see where you're going with it.
I thought last week, I mean, on a serious note, they did exactly what they wanted to do for that week. You know, they had a schedule where they were going to back guys down and really try to make it as close to a bye week without it being a bye week as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it ended up being. So, you know, I saw some critiques of the defense, and then I thought there were a few leaks against a team like Bethune-Cookman that make you think, ooh, that's not going to go great next week. But, you know, that's football, too. Sometimes I think in games like those, people are like expect it to be like 92-0 with the other side never getting a first down. And, you know, they got a couple fast guys, and they're going to get a couple plays. And all in all, you know, the starters held them to 3 points, and the offense pretty much scored every time they had the ball except for the one pick. So I thought the first team played pretty well and handled their business and took to heart, like, let's get these other guys in the game.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I mean, they did exactly what we sat here and talked about last week that we wanted to see them do, and that was get up on Bethune-Cookman early and keep pushing more points. And so I think that's what you want to see out of a team that's still growing, still getting better, and they handle a team that's vastly inferior, and they played the way that they should. As far as some of the other guys that got in, it was good to see Miles Jones. I think we saw what his speed can do if he's able to get onto the field. And he's still got a ways to go. Talked with Ryan Held this week. They still don't have the comfort level with him with the offense that he's going to be out there a bunch. But that's someone that they're very excited about going forward. And I know that we've talked a lot about him. I know that I, in particular, expected him to play more this year. But I think going forward, there's still very much a role for Miles Jones, and I'm excited to see what that is. We saw Braxton Clark.
Mm-hmm.
We saw some other young guys as well. We saw some guys that, you know, had played a little bit, but I thought Wyatt Mazur looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the offensive line struggling, a couple runs where he just froze a guy. And I know the Bethune-Cookman's not great, and they might have been getting backups in at that point too. But, you know, for a third down running back, I keep wondering if they can find ways to sneak him into the game a little bit more than they have, because he has good hands. He's a smart player. I was pretty impressed by him, too.
Yeah, I never want to overdo it with Wyatt.
Right.
But
because it perpetually gets done.
Yeah, because others will do it for you.
Right.
So you don't need to.
Right.
But you have to admit, every time you've ever seen that guy get a chance to play, I mean, he can only play against who's in front of him.
Right.
And he makes plays. And sometimes against, like in the spring game going back, against the starters, like I remember they were having a heck of a time with him. So all I know is that he succeeds when he's on the field in front of us.
His problem's just been staying healthy. I mean, he's had concussion issues, a couple other things he's battled during his career. I mean, when he's had chances, he's done well. But if you can't do it consistently enough, I mean, that's kind of been, I think, kind of added almost to the Woodhead comparisons that you get thrown around a lot. Just the fact that, you know, just those little glimpses, you've seen some things from him.
You know, back to Miles Jones real quick. He dropped the one little swing pass where I think he could have got about 15 or 20 more, but you saw the burst on the one play. And it's funny how the conversation is completely different about somebody if somebody else helps you out. He was wide open on this, on the one where Vedral was late with the throw and underthrew it. And if it's a decent throw and on time, he scores a 60-yard touchdown in his first game as a Husker, and people lose their minds, you know? And it would have only taken that one play to completely change the narrative of him right now. So it's kind of funny how that works sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When you look ahead to this game, and we'll get into more talk about it during the hype cast, but when you look ahead to this Ohio State game, are there areas where Nebraska can really attack here? I mean, their offense the last 3 weeks has been great, and that's been against Northwestern, who's now leading the Big Ten West. And, you know, next week when we get full into sock talk, they might have different socks than they've ever worn at any point in their program's history. And then Minnesota, who had a very good rush defense until Nebraska played them. And then Bethune-Cookman, who's whatever. But Nebraska's moved the ball well. The offense has moved the ball well. They possess the ball well. I really think they have an opportunity to run against Ohio State, and that's something they couldn't do last year. It's something they couldn't do in 2016 when they were 7-1. It's going to be interesting how that can change the game a little bit for Nebraska if they're able to have success early running the ball.
It feels like Adrian Martinez, just his presence, I think, is going to open things a little bit more for the running game than maybe what it did last year. I mean, you had Tanner Lee, who you didn't really have to worry about as a runner. I think that just having to account for a running quarterback changes that considerably. I know Tommy Armstrong was there 2 years ago briefly and then came back. But I think that Martinez's ability to change game with his feet, and also just the fact that he's an accurate passer. I mean, he's completing 66% of his passes right now. I think that will help guys like Divine Ozigbo and Maurice Washington find space that maybe they wouldn't have gotten otherwise against this Ohio State defense. And we've seen, you know, Minnesota ran the ball pretty well against them. Purdue had their moments as well. So I agree. I think there's a chance that Nebraska could definitely make that work.
Ohio State's also 85th against the pass. I mean, they're giving up a lot of yards on that back end. And J.D. Spielman can play for anybody in the country. Stanley Morgan, same way. You've got two guys like that that they're not intimidated by Ohio State or how many stars those guys had as recruits. Those are guys who are going to think they can get anything done against them. And so I keep going back to Wisconsin in my head, that how that game played out, because I think the offensive attack could be similar, where Nebraska had an efficient running game against Wisconsin, but they actually were pretty pass heavy, and I think Ozigbo only carried it like 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, both
he and
Washington.
They need to get him more touches this time. But I could see Nebraska coming out, trying to get some short passes going, then kind of stretch the field, and then try to get Ozigbo going. Maybe that, I don't know how the rhyme or reason how it works out, but that's kind of how I could picture it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. One of the things that could be really interesting too, no Nick Boza. He hasn't played most of this year, right, for Ohio State, and he's done.
He is focusing on the draft.
And so their pass rush isn't nearly as good as what it was projected to be. It's almost one of those situations where Nebraska's offensive line is getting better, that probably plays into Ohio State's defensive struggles a little bit, is that they aren't getting that pass rush, and then you're going against Indiana and Purdue and some of these teams that are able to move the ball through the air, and you're not able – I mean, recent teams that Nebraska's played against Ohio State had a different Boza. Or in 2017, I mean, they were still very good in terms of getting after the passer. So that's going to be a little bit different if Nebraska has some more time, too, in the pocket. And that played into the Wisconsin thing, too. You weren't worried about the Badgers' pass rush, and so you were able to throw a little bit more, and Martinez could scan the field a little bit longer, too, which is good and bad. I know that Verduzco doesn't like it when he holds the ball for too long. He wants him to make a pretty quick decision on most things.
It's just a different mentality too with this staff, where I think all of us, because we've seen some horrific things with Nebraska and Ohio State and in other big game settings, we always wonder if Nebraska can move the ball. It's kind of like, oh, can they get anything going? And this is a staff that I think they do breed a confidence in their players, where they just they expect you're going to move the ball. You know, you're going to have success. You're going to put up a lot of yards. It's just going to come down to finishing, and it's going to come down to third downs, and it's going to come down to when Nebraska gets those few drives where they get to the 40-yard line and it feels like, okay, they've got something promising going here. Can you keep that going, or are you going to get stopped on a 4th-and-1, or that 3rd-and-6 goes haywire, or you have a false start at the worst possible time? Penalties on the offense will be huge in this game. They need to keep it down to like just a couple, and they can't have that stupid false start or holding penalty or chop block, you know, right when you're about to do something in this kind of game.
Have there been some guys, since Nebraska's kind of turned it around in October, let's say, I actually thought they played pretty well against Wisconsin, all things considered. Have there been some guys that have jumped out to you maybe over the last month that their play has increased? I know for me, I look at the two guys on the offensive line at the bookend spots at tackle. I think Farniak has played well. I think that Brendan Hymus has played well, certainly much better than they did against Michigan in September. And some of that is who they're getting to play. As we get further from those games and you look at Troy and you look at Michigan and what they're doing to other teams is basically what they did to Nebraska. And so it doesn't look as bad or doesn't seem as bad. But those two guys jump out to me. Is there somebody else out there that has maybe elevated their play beyond what your expectations were? Or has just stepped up from where they're at to where you thought they might have been?
I would have said Hymus would have been the big one for me. I think he's playing really well right now.
It's really his job, isn't it?
Right. I think that I would say that Lamar Jackson has played better since that Purdue game. I think, you know, Dedrick Young has kind of been a message board target for his play the last few years. I think he's played a little bit better. So I don't know. It feels like to me that the defensive front seven, I think, has been a little bit better the last couple weeks. If I can't say Hymus, I think everybody's going to point to, you know, the offense as really kind of stepping up the last few weeks. But I think defensively, you've seen guys who have taken on a bigger role and actually kind of run with the opportunities a little bit.
I think Ben Stilley's a guy who's consistently growing into somebody who maybe by next fall is like an all-conference type player.
Whoa.
Well, I think he can be that. I think he's got that type of...
It's a lot of Big Macs for people.
Well, he's got an old-school Husker way about him that I kind of like, and I just think he's going to be a worker, and I don't care about the whole did he wear black or gold last week, but it does get to his mentality. He's kind of one of those kids who, like, he's very prideful about everything he does with football, and so I just don't think he's going to accept average material from him over the next couple of years. There's the ice machine on cue.
Jeez.
They did not like my Stilley take.
Yeah, it's out. Which is a little bit ridiculous considering we're at home. You'd think there would have been a little bit more in favor of it, but
you gotta be like a quarterback on the road right now.
Yeah.
You're like,
we're just gonna go to a silent count here.
The one guy, and it's not that he wasn't playing well early in the season, but in some ways it felt like people were conflating his message off the field with how he was playing on the field. I feel like Mo Berry has really taken a jump. I mean, these last couple of weeks, that guy is in the backfield all the time, and he's really tightened up his run fits. I mean, early in the season, I thought he struggled at times and would be in the wrong gap, or you'd have two guys go to the same spot. I don't know if it's his fault or somebody else's, but from the Wisconsin game on, he has been really good. As far as, I mean, Nebraska hasn't had the best inside linebacker play in basically a while. And he just feels very consistent in everything he does. And it's not just, you know, the Bethune-Cookman's one thing. You kind of expect him to overwhelm and be able to get in the backfield there. He did it against Minnesota routinely. Like, he was Johnny on the spot multiple times against the Gophers. I just have been really impressed by Berry. And he really took kind of a jump beyond what I expected him to be. So he's someone else that has stood out for me. And he's going to be a senior next year. I think he's the unquestioned leader of the defense at this point, which is remarkable because he hadn't been a starter coming into this year. And yet anybody you talk to on the defensive side of the ball will basically tell you that he's the heartbeat of that defense. And he not only just, you know, you always – Nebraska, I've always kind of joked, has long had the history of these guys that are sort of the – their leadership role is they'll just show up and do it, but they're not real vocal. I mean, he's the one guy in recent years I can think of that was super vocal leader and has now proven it on the field.
He's the anti-Rex.
Yeah. Rex is a great example of that, but it goes beyond him too. I mean, Levante didn't speak.
Right.
He spoke at halftime of the Ohio State game in 2011. Everybody marveled at it, and then he went out and made a great play. But it just – you know, Sue wasn't a super vocal guy with his teammates. He was with the media, but he wasn't, you know, a rah-rah speech person. But you get the feeling that Berry is that, and then you go watch him play. I mean, if you're one of his teammates, like, you know that guy's working hard. So it's not like he's just saying things to the media and looking good. We've seen, you know, I don't have to name names. I feel like we've seen examples of that in the past where a guy's really propped up by what he says on a Monday press conference and not what he does on Saturday.
I can give you, there's another example of a guy who maybe, because of injury, has, it's disappointing, because I was hoping we'd see more of Tyron Ferguson. And I think early in the season, like against Colorado, just the way he was bouncing around out there and got after things, I thought, man, he's going to be like one of the, when you're talking about Mo Berry, like Ferguson and Berry are going to really play off each other as kind of the heart of this defense. And Ferguson's just got to get over that injury hump. It's been like hamstring stuff this year, I think, and I think last year even that popped up.
It's some ankle stuff too.
Yeah,
I think.
At the right when it looked like he was going to play. And so he's one of those guys. I don't know what kind of health he's in this week, but November, they need a guy like Tyron Ferguson to help that linebacker crew out too, to, you know, get some snaps out of him.
Yeah. Let's jump quickly into recruiting, which has been on fire for Nebraska lately. Three commits since the last time we recorded this podcast, including Darian Chase, wide receiver out of Washington. And then you have Bryce Benhart on Sunday night, which surprised everyone. Well, I shouldn't say, I don't think people were surprised where he chose to go. There was no planned announcement, so I think the timing of it surprised a lot of people.
Wasn't that kind of Bryce Benhart-like, though?
Yeah.
To just
do it and then not talk about it.
Here it is, and I'm going to get a blizzard at Dairy Queen.
And then, as we are recording this on a Wednesday, Javen Wright committed to Nebraska this morning at 6 a.m. local time. That's how fired up he was to get that tweet out there this morning. And so Nebraska's picked up three guys, five in season. They're at 20 commitments. On Thursday, Wandale Robinson makes a decision. I think everybody here has a Nebraska crystal ball for that situation. And Nebraska's just killing it right now in recruiting. Why? What is working for a team that's 2-6? What have you seen? What have you heard? And where do you think this thing can go?
Well, I think Nebraska's doing what most first-year staffs have to do. You have to sell the future, and you have to sell getting in on the bottom floor of that. And I think guys are responding to that. I mean, if you're an offensive player seeing this offense with a freshman quarterback doing what it's doing, it's a pretty easy sell, I think. And for a guy like, you know, you can probably expound on this more than I can, but Bryce Benhart, I mean, wasn't really an option for Nebraska when the staff took over. And to the staff's credit, they did a hell of a job recruiting him and his family. But it's the same thing with, you know, Darian Chase visits, Nebraska puts up huge numbers offensively. Same thing with Benhart, with, you know, a depth chart that seems to be not wide open, but open to early playing time. I think that's appealing too. And I don't know. I just think that there's enough signs in what the staff is doing of selling the future. I think prospects are really responding to that, and the confidence that these guys have that they're going to get things turned around quickly.
Yeah, I think most big-time recruits, and this is a good thing, they have egos. I mean, they've always been the best player at everything they've done. And so they look at a 2-6 program and they say, put me in at that spot and I'll be the guy who changes things. And it's always been that way for 10, 50 years, I mean, going back. But I think, especially now, the Adrian Martinez factor is a help too, I think. I just think like guys see that and they're like, man, this kid's the real deal. You know, if you're a wide receiver like Chase, it's pretty exciting. You want to block for a guy like that if you're, you know, Benhart. Greg Austin talked about that today. So I just think it's all kind of working together. And, you know, to have a class that's ranked 22nd in the country right now, that's a pretty good spot to be in, considering, you know, sometimes it takes 2 years in advance to really get your board exactly how you want it to be.
And that's maybe the scary thing for other teams, is that Nebraska has done a really nice job recruiting 2020 ahead, while also having a lot of success 2019, despite maybe the on-field product not looking as good as what recruits might have hoped. You know, one final thought on this, and this kind of gets lost in some of it, and, you know, it gets lost to me, or it gets lost when you look at numbers or depth charts or all the other things. Nebraska plays a fun version of football. Mike Riley and his staff did a tremendous job reaching out to people and building excitement and hype and fun and all of that. Or not fun, but all of that. But when it came to the product on the field, it didn't look like something you would have fun playing. Nebraska's offense didn't look enjoyable to be in. Even if you're a wide receiver and you know that there's going to be good quarterbacks or they've recruited good quarterbacks, in 3 years, it always sort of looked like this hapless mess. You look at Nebraska's offense right now, if you're Wandale Robinson and you have Adrian Martinez, Maurice Washington, you're seeing two freshmen play, and then you're seeing what they're able to do with Spielman and Morgan and Divino Zigbo, and all of these guys are able to eat and provide and do everything that they can do on the field. I mean, there is something to be said for just having a team that's fun, and Nebraska has that. They're 2-6, and they're probably the most interesting and most fun offense I've covered in maybe the last 4 or 5 years since good Taylor Martinez.
And if you're a skill guy, you're not just this position. You're not just pigeonholed into that. You're like a Maurice Washington where you can work on your receiver skills or your running back skills and do it all. And I think that's a big deal to kids now because they see – they watch how the NFL goes. If you want to make it to that league, you got to be a versatile guy who can not just be a running back who runs it between the tackles but catches it out of the backfield, splits out wide. You got to do all that stuff to get to the next level. And so I think they see that, and they think, oh, that, you know, that's going to be beneficial to me, not just in college, but maybe for bigger goals beyond that.
All right. Well, we are going to wrap things up early today. Short podcast on Ohio State. We went long on Bethune-Cookman. That makes sense.
The ice machine just got in our heads, maybe. Yeah.
But as always, we'll have everything for you at Husker 24/7. We've got a great deal going on right now. If you're listening to this, you know, early in the week, you can buy 1 month, get one free. That'll get all of your VIP recruiting information through December signing period. That'll take you in through the rest of the season. You'll get great stuff. You'll get the BC breakdowns. You'll get analysis. Brunts will be on basketball here shortly. He looks enthusiastic as I mentioned this. Nebraska, a top 25 team. Some people might not know that. They also just had a departure randomly yesterday, but I don't even know if I know the guy's name. However, if I needed to learn his name, I could find it at Husker 24/7, where you can find everything else and all of the great coverage. And so be sure to stop by, check that out, and sign up if you're not yet a member.